Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, Chapter 17. How the Humble and the Haughty Are to Be Admonished. Differently to be admonished are the humble and the haughty. To the former, it is to be insinuated how true is that excellence which they hold in hoping for it. To the latter, it is to be intimated how that temporal glory is as nothing, which even when embracing it, they hold it not. Let the humble hear how eternal are the things that they long for, how transitory the things which they despise. Let the haughty hear how transitory are the things they court, how eternal the things they lose. Let the humble hear from the authoritative voice of the truth, everyone that humbles himself shall be exalted. Let the haughty hear, everyone that exalts himself shall be humbled. Let the humble hear, humility goes before glory. Let the haughty hear, pride goes before a fall. Let the humble hear, unto whom shall I have respect, but to him that is humble and quiet, and that trembles at my words? Let the haughty hear, why is earth and ashes proud? Let the humble hear, God turns his face upon the things that are humble. Let the haughty hear, and lofty things he knows from far off. Let the humble hear that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. Let the haughty hear, the beginning of all sin is pride. Let the humble hear that our Redeemer humbled himself, being made obedient, even unto death. Let the haughty hear what is written concerning their head, he is king over all the sons of pride. The pride, therefore, of the devil became the occasion of our perdition, and the humility of God has been found the argument for our redemption. For our enemy, having been created among all things, desired to appear exalted above all things. But our Redeemer, remaining great above all things, deigned to become little among all things. Let the humble then be told that when they abase themselves, they ascend to the likeness of God. Let the haughty be told that when they exalt themselves, they fall into imitation of the apostate angel. What, then, is more debased than haughtiness, which, while it stretches itself above itself, is lengthened out beyond the stature of true loftiness? And what is more sublime than humility, which, while it presses itself down to the lowest, conjoins itself to its Maker, who remains above the highest? There is, however, another thing in these cases that ought to be carefully considered: that some are often deceived by a false show of humility, while some are beguiled by ignorance of their own haughtiness. For commonly, some who think themselves humble have an admixture of fear, such as is not due to men, while an assertion of free speech commonly goes with the haughty. And when any vices require to be rebuked, the former hold their peace out of fear, and yet esteem themselves as being silent out of humility. The latter speak in the impatience of haughtiness, yet believe themselves to be speaking in the freedom of uprightness. Those, the fault of timidity under a show of humility, keeps back from rebuking what is wrong. These, the unbridled impetuosity of pride, under the image of freedom, impels to rebuke things they ought not, or to rebuke them more than they ought. For this reason, both the haughty are to be admonished not to be free more than is becoming, and the humble are to be admonished not to be more submissive than is right, lest either the former, the haughty, turn the defense of righteousness into a display of pride, or the latter, while they study more than needs to submit themselves to men, be driven even to pay respect to men's vices. It is, however, to be considered that for the most part we more profitably reprove the haughty, if with our reproofs of them we mingle some balms of praise. For some other good things that are in them should be introduced into our reproofs, or at all events some that might have been, though they are not. And then, at last, the bad things that displease us should be cut away, when previous allowance of the good things that please us has made their minds favorably disposed to listen. For unbroken horses, too, we first touch with a gentle hand, that we may afterwards subdue them to us, even with whips. And the sweetness of honey is added to the bitter cup of medicine, lest the bitterness, which is to be of profit for health, be felt harsh in the act of tasting. But while the taste is deceived by sweetness, the deadly humor is expelled by bitterness. In the case, then, of the haughty, the first beginnings of our rebuke should be tempered with an admixture of praise, that while they admit the commendations which they love, they may also accept the reproofs which they hate. Moreover, we shall in most cases better persuade the haughty to their profit if we speak of their improvement as likely to profit us rather than them. If we request their amendment to be bestowed upon us more than on themselves. For haughtiness is easily bent to good, if its bending be believed to be of profit to others also. Whence Moses, who journeyed through the desert under the direction of God and the leading of the cloudy pillar, when he would draw Hobab his kinsman from converse with the Gentile world and subdue him to the dominion of Almighty God, said, "We are journeying to the place of which the Lord said, 'I will give it to you. Come with us, and we will do you good. For the Lord has spoken good concerning Israel.' And when the other had replied to him, 'I will not go with you, but will return to my own land in which I was born,' Moses straightway added, 'Do not leave us, I pray you, for you know in what places we should camp in the wilderness, and you will be our guide.'" And yet Moses was not restricted in his own mind by ignorance of the way, seeing that acquaintance with deity had opened out within him the knowledge of prophecy. And the pillar went before him outwardly, while inwardly familiar speech in his sedulous converse with God instructed him concerning all things. But in truth, as a man of foresight talking to a haughty hearer, he sought succor that he might give it. He requested a guide on the way, that he might be able to be Hobab's guide to life. Thus Moses so acted that the proud hearer should become all the more attentive to the voice that persuaded him to better things from being supposed to be necessary. And in that he believed himself to be his exhorter's guide, Hobab should bow himself to the words of exhortation. Chapter 18. How the Obstinate and the Fickle are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are the obstinate and the fickle. The former are to be told that they think more of themselves than they are, and therefore do not acquiesce in the counsels of others. But the fickle are to be given to understand that they undervalue and disregard themselves too much, and so are turned aside from their own judgment in successive moments of time. Those are to be told that unless they esteemed themselves better than the rest of men, they would by no means set less value on the counsels of all than on their own deliberation. The fickle are to be told that if they at all gave heed to what they are, the breeze of mutability would by no means turn them about through so many sides of variableness. To the obstinate it is said through Paul, "Do not be wise in your own conceits." But The latter, on the other hand, should hear this: let us not be carried about with every wind of doctrine. Concerning the obstinate, it is said through Solomon, they shall eat of the fruits of their own way, and be filled with their own devices. But concerning the latter, it is written by him again, the heart of the foolish will be unlike. For the heart of the wise is always like itself, because while it rests in good persuasions, it directs itself constantly in good performance. But the heart of the foolish is unlike itself, because while it shows itself various through mutability, it never remains what it was. And since some vices, as out of themselves they generate others, so themselves spring from still others, it ought by all means to be understood that we then better wipe these away by our reproofs when we dry them up from the very fountain of their bitterness. For obstinacy is engendered from pride, and fickleness from levity. The obstinate are therefore to be admonished that they acknowledge the haughtiness of their thoughts, and study to vanquish themselves, lest while they scorn to be overcome by the right advice of others outside themselves, they be held captive within themselves by pride. They are to be admonished to observe wisely how the Son of Man, whose will is always one with the Father's, that he may afford us an example of subduing our own will, says, I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father who has sent me. And still more to commend the grace of this virtue, he declared beforehand that he would retain the same in the last judgment, saying, I can of myself do nothing, but as I hear, I judge. With what conscience, then, can a man disdain to acquiesce in the will of another, saying that the Son of God and of man, when he comes to show forth the glory of his power, testifies that of his own self he does not judge? But, on the other hand, the fickle are to be admonished to strengthen their mind with gravity, for they then dry up the germs of mutability in themselves when they first cut off from their heart the root of levity, since also a strong fabric is built up when a solid place is first provided whereon to lay the foundation. Unless, then, levity of mind be previously guarded against, inconstancy of the thoughts is by no means conquered. From this Paul declared himself to be free when he said, Did I use levity? Or the things that I purpose, do I purpose according to the flesh, that with me there should be yea and nay? As if to say plainly, for this reason I am moved by no breeze of mutability, that I yield not to the vice of levity. End of chapter 18.